Welcome to the March Podcast. On this podcast, we dive into some critical conversations shaping the agriculture and food policy landscape. First, I'm joined by Reese Langley. Reese is the principal at Langley Consulting, a bipartisan government relations and consulting firm. We discuss the newly introduced bipartisan Grown in America Act and what that means for wheat growers. Next, Kansas farmer Clay Shem gives us an overview and shares highlights from 2025 Commodity Classic in Denver, Colorado. And later, I'm honored to speak with Senator John Bozeman, chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. We talked about the committee's recent hearings on the financial pressures facing the agriculture industry and the chairman's top priorities for the 119th Congress. But before we jump into those important conversations, here is a message from NOG's new president, Pat Clements. Pat, it's great to have you back on. Officially, you are NOG's new president. Congrats on this honor. How are you feeling about it?
I'm excited and energized to get going on my term. I keep telling everybody the length of a year is a lot different looking forward or back. And I'm aware of how fast this will go by and what I need to get done while I'm here. I'm inspired by the fact that I was drawn into leadership many years ago by actually complaining about a policy or a practice and asking someone, I wonder how this came to be like this. And they very calmly answered, well, it got like that because someone wanted it that way. And if you want it different, you need to get involved. And that inspired me to get started being involved in ag organizations and trying to affect policy. So I'm pleased to be serving as NOG president at what is near the end of my career in the business. I'm at an age where I'm ready to cut back a little on my career and spend more time with family and relaxing. And I'm just really, really happy about being able to finish out my career in this position.
As you think about your presidency, what are you looking forward to most and what do you hope to achieve during your time?
Well, I need to be the person who represents every state that is a member of NOG. And to do that, I need to be aware of their needs, and I want to make myself aware of their needs and concerns. We're going through some personnel changes and staff changes here at NOG. I'm excited about the opportunities we have. I'm greatly appreciative of the people that have been with us and helped us accomplish what we've accomplished so far. And my job is to lead us through this time of transition. It is to be a voice for each and every state, not just a few and not just my officer team, who I greatly respect and enjoy working with. My job is to represent every member of NOG and see that their concerns are addressed. So I hope to unite all of us behind a common goal, and at the end of my year, 1 year term as NOG president, I hope I can say that the organization is just at least a little bit better off than it was when I got here.
Reese, thank you for coming on the NOG podcast, you know, to talk about an issue that is top of mind for producers as Congress needs to pass a new tax package this year. So as you know, NOG is a proud member of the Ag Investment for America Coalition. Can you explain in more detail what this coalition does and your role with it?
Yes. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to join today and be part of the podcast. So the Ag Investment for America Coalition was started a little over 2 years ago. And as you mentioned, NOG was one of the early members that joined that organization. And now we're up to over 10 groups, and it includes other commodity organizations like the National Sorghum Producers, USA Rice, National Barley Growers Association, and National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. And then we have some more on the food and beverage business side, like FMI, the Food Industry Association, and the National Association of Manufacturers. So we have a very broad representation through the commodity and food and beverage supply chain. And the goal and purpose of the coalition is to develop policy and legislation that we are working to try to get included in the broader tax package that we expect Congress to consider later this year. And so the focus of the coalition is really on advancing tax policy, tax credits, for U.S. businesses that are prioritizing their sourcing of raw commodities from U.S. growers, farmers, and ranchers to use in the production and manufacture of food and beverage products here in the U.S.
So, as you know, one of those important pieces of tax legislation that the coalition has been working on is the Bipartisan Grown in America Act. Earlier this month, Congressman David Kustoff and Congressman Jim Acosta introduced it. NOG and the coalition have partnered to endorse this legislation. Can you describe what this bill would do and why it's important for wheat growers?
Right. So the Grown in America Act that was introduced recently and actually reintroduced, we had the same version of that was introduced late in the last Congress. And so now we're moving forward with reintroduction this year. And the bottom line, this legislation would provide for a 25% tax credit for U.S. businesses based on the value of U.S. grown or raised commodities that that company or cooperative is purchasing to then use to manufacture a food or beverage product. And that's something I think important to highlight. It's not only businesses and companies, but it's also cooperatives that are, as you know, owned by farmers and ranchers. And co-ops are also eligible to participate in this tax credit. And so the way the legislation is structured is that 25% tax credit on domestic purchases would be available for companies that are already sourcing at least 50% of their needs in the US. And so that's the threshold to qualify. And then each year going forward, the company or co-op must increase their domestic sourcing percentage at least 5% until we reach 85%. And so that's meant to help further incentivize even greater sourcing of U.S. grown commodities.
Another big issue that definitely, affects this is the Trump administration has already implemented some tariffs. So why do you think it's crucial now to have these tax credits that encourage businesses to shift away from those foreign markets and invest in US-made ag commodities?
Well, I think there are a lot of pieces here to kind of connect. I mean, first of all, we believe this policy and this legislation fits squarely within the bucket and the focus that the current administration is looking at in terms of trying to bring more production and more manufacturing capacity and investment back to the U.S. and reshore that. And this certainly would help incentivize that, as well as supporting our U.S. farmers and ranchers. And as you said, hopefully giving them greater markets and more demand in the U.S. versus having to be as reliant on some of these foreign export markets that can be unreliable. And so we know this is something that could certainly help maintain and strengthen the domestic customer base for many of these raw commodities. And in addition to that, it will help incentivize more capital investment and expansion of manufacturing in the U.S. We believe it will help reduce some of the market volatility that farmers and ranchers face, as well as hopefully decreasing our reliance on some imported products and trying to alleviate some of those supply chain pressures that we've experienced.
So this important piece of legislation has already been introduced. What is the coalition planning on doing moving forward to ensure that this gets included in a tax package that Congress will vote on this year?
So we have the House version of the Grown in America Act, bipartisan introduction by Mr. Kustoff and Mr. Costa. We have about six other co-sponsors already on that legislation. And so the coalition and the members of the coalition are now really focused on trying to grow that co-sponsorship list on the House bill. So we're working to talk to as many offices as we can across the House and add a large number of co-sponsors to demonstrate the broad support for this among various regions and members that represent different parts of the agriculture industry or different commodities. And then we're also working on getting a Senate companion bill introduced very soon. And again, obviously trying to then grow that co-sponsor base. And all of this is leading up to demonstrating the broad support in Congress to include this policy, this legislation in that larger tax package that we expect them to work on and hopefully finalize before the end of this year. So certainly the coalition, but also each of the coalition members like NOG and your membership can be so helpful and effective by making this part of your topics that you talk about anytime you're meeting with members of Congress and their staff during fly-ins and other opportunities, making sure this is they're made aware of this and asking them to please co-sponsor the Grown in America Act.
Well, thank you for outlining that. You touched on it a little bit towards the end of your response, but this is legislation that is so important for our farmers. Is there anything else you think that they could be doing, to help the coalition and NOG's efforts to get this bill passed this year?
Absolutely. I think, in addition to that direct outreach to congressional offices, I think just more discussion about this among the state groups, grower groups, other opportunities when growers are together, making sure they're educating their colleagues about this legislation, why it's important, and why it's something the industry cares about, just so we can hopefully amplify that support and demonstrate to Congress and the administration that this is something that U.S. agriculture and the U.S. food and beverage industry is strongly behind and has a number of benefits throughout the supply chain.
Clay, it's great to have you on the podcast. How are things going in Western Kansas?
Lately it's been a little windy. I'm not sure if people have kept up, but we've been having just a wild amount of wind. I know just this past week we had gusts up to, I think, 68 miles an hour. Just a wild amount of wind that we've been having, trying to get a little bit of spraying in for early season here. But kind of general for my area, we're still dry, but a little bit more hopeful than we were last year for the wheat crop in my area. So we've been doing all right so far here.
Well, that's good to know. I really hope that you guys have a good harvest this year. So earlier this month, the whole NOG team, we attended Commodity Classic. So can you explain to our listeners who might not know what is Commodity Classic and why it is so important to the agriculture community?
Definitely. So obviously there's a lot of ag shows out there. Commodity Classic is an ag show that is focused on the commodity groups. So the owners of the show is a combination of equipment manufacturers, the National Corn Growers Association, and the American Soybean Association. In combination with that, we also have National Sorghum Producers and the National Association of Wheat Growers that are affiliate members. And so part of that is that we don't necessarily fully own the show, but we are a very large part of it. We help make direction and strategic decisions with the show. The best way, if I could sum it up in a two-word sentence for people that don't know about it, is that it is a trade show dedicated to farmers looking to improve their operations and learn more and continue to stay at the front of their industry.
So you mentioned before about the Affiliates Council that helps to plan Commodity Classic. So you and I serve as NOG's representatives on the Commodity Classic Affiliates Council. Can you explain in a little more detail NOG's role on that council and how the Commodity Classic planning process unfolds?
Yep. So the council there is composed of two representatives from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, three growers from corn and soy, the national groups, along with staff from those groups. And then sorghum and wheat both have one farmer leader as well as one staff member that attend the council. And what happens at these meetings is we go through what locations we're going to be having the shows at. We go through booth planning, what different sessions we want to have, what speakers we want to have, what events we want to try to host. One thing that the Affiliates Council and staff, especially the co-chairs, worked very hard on this was Commodity Classic this year fell on the State of the Union address when we would typically have the Secretary of Ag speak. So she was not able to make the general session. But they put in a tremendous amount of work to make sure that during the opening day of the show, we had her speak to the crowd. And that's one of the unique and cool things about Commodity Classic is that we get to bring in the Secretary of Ag. You know, at Houston last year, we brought in the EPA director as well. And we get to let people have those conversations. And thankfully, the Secretary of Ag was generous, and the leaders of corn, soy, sorghum, and wheat were able to meet at a round table with the Secretary of Ag. And while you can go to DC and have those, there's a certain amount of benefits that you get from being able to have a trade show, host them, and get your leaders that when you're part of these organizations, you can push forward what issues you're dealing with on your farm. And you can push it up and you can get a coalition behind it to get that communication to these directors, to these secretaries, and let them know the issues that you're dealing with. I mean, I know me and all the other guys that are listening to this that farm understand that you travel about 2.5 hours away from where I farm at. There's going to be some things that I don't even know about. Good example, us as wheat growers, maybe some of the guys have better ideas on it than me, but I didn't know what a tile line was until college. We don't deal with excess rain in my area. And so when you can build that coalition and describe those issues to people that might not otherwise understand, you can have very direct benefits to your operation. And a lot of these people that get put in these positions are wanting to try to help. You just got to make sure to communicate to them how they can help, because sometimes they don't know. And I think that's where Commodity Classic is phenomenal, is you can have those conversations with not only political representatives or appointees, but you can also do it on the trade show floor.
Well, thanks for going over all those benefits of Commodity Classic. Going back to the Affiliates Council, definitely, you know, it has been so interesting to find out all that goes on behind planning all of these huge trade shows, which has been really interesting. And also, I think it's very important to note, especially like, as you said, each of the commodity organizations that is a partner of this, we have a staff person and a farmer on it. So this is a farmer-led event, which I think helps to make it be so successful. So what are some standout things that happened at Commodity Classic for you this year?
So obviously having Brooke Rollins there, Secretary of Ag, and her making time to be there was definitely a standout event for me on it. One of the things that I always really enjoy about Commodity Classic is the collaboration and networking that you can do, not only with vendors where you attend their different booths and everything, but also different farmers within the group. This year, with the different schedule, we had a chance to do a pancake breakfast, which the name doesn't help out with, but was a lot more than just pancakes. It was actually a phenomenal breakfast. If anybody out there understands how trying to feed that many people goes, great quality for what we had. But I think that's a big thing of Commodity Classic is, and a big thing that stood out to me, especially this year, was we had a lot of different collaborative events going on. Not only do we have all the learning session, the what's new sessions that let people know what's going on in the industry or learn more about what's going on research wise, we had that ability to interact with other farmers. I mean, Denver, we had record high attendance numbers for farmers. And if I remember the numbers, and you can correct me, but it was over 5,000 farmers that were at this event. And I think we had over 11,000 people overall at the event, which is just phenomenal to have that many people in 3 days to be able to have those connections and all of that. And then also within NOG specifically, we had our 75th anniversary celebration, and we had a really cool look into the history of NOG and our involvement in Commodity Classic and what the group started as an organization and how it's developed. I would say NOG as a whole, we still have our original mission of improving conditions for wheat farmers across the United States. But we've also had evolving items on our mission and what we try to do. You know, farming now is a lot different than farming in 1950. And NOG has been able to have the guidance of many, many great leaders running through it to help guide that direction to what wheat farmers need.
Definitely, I think this year's Commodity Classic was very successful, especially even with the NOG 75th. Another thing I think was very cool with our press conference is that we had leadership from 30 years of NOG. We had, I think the oldest serving one was a president in the 90s. And then we had, you know, as our most recent past president. So that was great to, you know, get everybody gathered for that.
Absolutely. It was really cool to be able to see that and see the continued legacy of it and what our group tries to accomplish and who we have there working on it. And personally, from my side of things, it was really cool to get to see my dad up there. And he's a part of that history as well. And, you know, the issues that were top of the list for him when he was president are completely different. Not completely different. He's recent enough. They're not completely different. But the issues and problems they were facing when he was president are very much different than what we're facing now. There's development in it, and there's different routes that we go, but every leader that hops into that position has their own unique challenges that they have to face and what they're dealing with. And so it is, like you said, really cool to see that history there, be able to look at what we've accomplished and see the real change that National Association of Wheat Growers has been able to make in the difference of whether it be a farm bill or specific policies going, but be able to see that work that those leaders have put in.
So you touched on this a little bit before, but in your opinion, why do you think it is so important for producers to come to Commodity Classic, and what really values can they gain from attending this event?
Like you said, I touched on it a little bit before. I think, especially for a producer that's never come to an event, I'm the same as the next guy. I like to go see equipment out in the field. I can appreciate that. But a unique thing about Commodity Classic is that we have equipment there. They have tests set up. They've got little demo stations and everything going on. But the unique perspective is that the exhibitors that are here are very knowledgeable about what they have brought to show. They can do that at a lot of places, but your small exhibitors, and for people that don't know, you know, your smallest exhibitor is typically like a 10-foot by 10-foot booth. A lot of those people coming could either be the owner of the company or a regional manager of it, where they control an entire region or an entire product division. You get to your bigger booths, they'll oftentimes have whole teams there of people with different dedicated disciplines within the company. Your big booths, like your Syngenta, your Bayer, your BASF, your John Deere, they have tons of people there that are the leads in their respective departments, and they know what is going on with their products, and they have decision-making power. And so when you talk with them, you're not getting brochure-level information on a system, whether that be a service that you're signing up for, an individual product improvement that you're looking at, or a full piece of equipment. The people that are there are giving you full details. If you're a member of one of the commodity organizations that puts this on, there are events going on. We have our yield contest going on. Sorghum has their yield contest and their pack casino night that goes on. Corn has their pack night that goes on, as well as their yield contest. And same with soybeans, yield contest and a pack auction. A lot of these groups also have meetings that are going on during this time where you can get a gist of what's going on in the industry if you haven't kept up on it. The other item is learning sessions. We, within the council, we try not to put learning sessions or what's new sessions on the docket that are rehash or something that everybody knows. These sessions are not, oh, go attend it, whatever. These sessions are actively learning and engaging. And because we have so many of them, people can pick and choose to go to the ones that interest them the most. And I think that is very beneficial to give people that option. These sessions are also high level enough that if you're a certified crop advisor, you can count them as continuing learning credits.
Well, thanks for going over all that. Definitely, I'm looking forward to next year's Commodity Classic in San Antonio.
Likewise, and starting the planning off here this next week.
Well, Chairman Bozeman, we are so excited to have you on the podcast. I know Congress has had a busy start to the year, and we really appreciate you taking the time to address our listeners.
Well, thank you so much. As always, it's a real pleasure to be with you.
So, since assuming the gavel, the Senate Ag Committee has hosted a series of hearings that have largely focused on the economic crisis that is facing the U.S. agriculture industry. Last month, our former president, Keith Felty, testified at one of these hearings. We were so grateful to have the opportunity to be included in such an important discussion. Could you provide more details on key takeaways from these hearings and any significant insights that you gained?
Well, first of all, we really appreciate the participation. WEED is always there, not only at our hearings here in Washington, they do a tremendous job, did a tremendous job at that hearing, but also as we've traveled the country for the last almost 3 years now, doing various events in states all over the country. WEED growers are always there, they always participate, and it really does make a huge difference. It's so important that our producers stand together, speak as a voice, and that's something that you all do, and it truly is invaluable. What we're trying to do is do hearings that lay the groundwork so that our members will better understand the difficult situation that the farm community is in right now. If you look at the last farm bill that we passed in 2018, the people that were here then in 2018 when it was passed, there's about probably 250 or so that weren't here at that time. They don't know what a farm bill is. They don't know anything about it. We've been trying to educate them. You all have been trying to educate them. And so that's what these hearings do. But also, most people don't realize how difficult it is now with the input cost, how high they are, and how difficult it is to make it such where you produce a crop that you can actually make some money out of. So that's where we're at, and I think so far our hearings have been very successful. We've had great participation from a number of different commodities and are going to continue down that path for a little bit.
What are some of your top priorities in terms of ag policy for the 119th Congress, and how are you planning on getting those accomplished?
Well, the biggest thing, I keep talking about a farm bill, is getting a farm bill done. And I was in North Dakota and at a hearing with Senator Hovind, Senator Cramer. And one of the ladies there said, "Senator, we need more farm in the farm bill." And I thought that's exactly right. You know, we have to do a better job of getting more tools in the toolbox for our farmers so that they can handle the risk management that they've got to do as they plant these crops, because right now it's so difficult. It's been really difficult for the last 2 years. Sadly, when you visit with the economist, whether it's the USDA economist, our economist on our team, we've got these great land grants scattered all over the country that do a tremendous job. All of them feel like nothing's really going to change in the near future. And so we've just got to increase the risk management tools so that our farmers have the ability to hedge against, if things don't get better and prices don't get better and inputs continue to rise or stay like they are. So that's the biggest thing. Along with that, certainly research is important. Trade is very, very important. We also are starting to have a hearing or two about things like a big forestry bill. Right now we're seeing the fires that are going on all over the country, and we've seen these out west, but now we're starting to see these in the southeast part of the country, the southern part of the country. And so as a result, it's just something we've got to do a better job of managing our forest. We've got another bill that has to do with nutrition, whole milk, things like that. So a variety of different things. But our primary goal is passing the Farm Bill in an expeditious way.
As you are well aware, the Farm Bill is top of mind for wheat growers, as well as the rest of the agriculture industry. NOG has been urging Congress to get a long-term Farm Bill signed into law this year. How likely do you think it is that we'll see this happen, and can you provide us any updates on where the Farm Bill currently stands in the legislative process?
Well, I think it's very likely that it's going to happen because, again, we're educating members as to why it needs to happen. And not only are we educating, but groups like the wheat growers and so many other organizations within the farm community are doing a good job coming to Capitol Hill, talking about the importance of, helping with risk management tools in a farm bill and all the other things that encompass a farm bill, conservation. The list goes on and on, helping rural America. So I think we're going to get a farm bill done. I'd like to see it done early this summer if possible. And I want to thank, again, the wheat organization, the wheat growers, for the tremendous job they do. That's how you get these things done, is from the grassroots. And I know that you all are working very, very hard to help us, and it's greatly appreciated. Because of the efforts of our farm community and Congress, leading the way, we were able to get some economic aid. It's $10 billion and another $21 billion for disaster aid at the end of the last Congress to kind of help with last year's sum. But we need to make it such that we incorporate those kind of tools in the Farm Bill so that we don't have to worry about this, so that farmers know that there is some risk management tools available. So biggest thing is all of us just working together, and if we do that, then I feel confident we can get a good, strong Farm Bill passed. We don't need to just pass a Farm Bill, though. This is a five-year commitment to our farmers. We're not talking about doing something for a year. Times are tough. We're not going to commit our farmers to 5 years of the same thing. So as I've said earlier, we need more farm in the Farm Bill, and we're working hard to do that.
With the new administration and the Farm Bill still in flux, uncertainty remains high. How can NOG and wheat growers collaborate to strengthen our mission to build a better future for wheat growers and rural America?
Well, again, I think we're doing a good job of that. Trying to do a good job with Congress, working with people like our wheat growers to better communicate to the public, better communicate to Congress, the people that are making these laws, as to why a farm bill is important, why rural America is so important, and the need. So it's just going to take all of us working together, communicating well, and doing the grassroots effort to get it over the top.
Thanks for listening to the March podcast. Make sure to keep up with us on social media and our website at wheatworld.org.